My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. This week we have some returning voices to the show. We've got Rusty Shackles and Jason Dvorak. Both have been on recent episodes and are part of the newer roster, but it was cool to just have them back again, and the conversations we had were super entertaining. So I'm glad they participated and were willing to jump on and join the show. This week we answer the question. It's been a while since we asked this one, but it is one of my favorite ones to ask. I was hoping to, you know, have far more episodes about it, but it's average games. So what is a personal favorite or just an average game that you love that doesn't get enough attention? So it's always interesting to hear like those deep cuts and those personal favorites and not just like the big blockbuster, you know, AAA obvious answers for some of like the hits and stuff. So great time chatting with both of them on that and asking those questions. So first part of the episode will be Rusty, and then after the break on the back half is with Jason. And beyond that, it's just a good time and a good conversation. Other business stuff up front, just like you can find it all in the show notes below. All the links to Rusty and Jason's personal stuff, social media, websites, all that stuff is there. Please check them out, follow along, and shout out and support them as well. Beyond that, same stuff I've got. The next week is going to be the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, so I will be there with my wife selling 32-bit library volume 1 through 4. 4 is going to be making its debut. The first day of the show is also going to be the first day it's going to be available to order on Amazon. Brian at Retro Game Books had a small run that was exclusive to him that is, I was going to maybe kind of share, but unfortunately at this point it's already sold out. So great job to everyone who is interested in that and buying that. Maybe we'll talk about restocks or something in the future for him. But otherwise, the show will be the first chance to get it physically, and it's also the first chance to get it in person, and then it'll be available to order on Amazon that same day on the 27th or 26th. It's the weekend. So, yeah, I'll be there doing that. As usual, my Patreon page is still running, and the same information there. If you like what I've been doing, if you've been enjoying the show, I've been trying to do some like write-ups and articles and things like that, just about more like gaming content, things that I've submitted to other sites. I reposted one of the articles I submitted to ForgottenWorlds.net that's on the Patreon page. You can read that for free. I just did a write-up on a behind-the-scenes look at the beat-em-up book I'm working on. Also, a little Dreamcast entry I wrote up around the anniversary of the Dreamcast launch. So there's stuff to follow along with, absolutely free, doesn't cost you anything. But if you've been enjoying the show and then you enjoy the writing and you're just wanting to find a way to support, there is a paid tier that you can join. It's just one. It's not like a multi-leveled thing or anything. But if you join the paid tier, there is a bonus podcast called Single Player. And I put out some weekly episodes there, usually like just kind of short form thing, no guests or anything, just kind of me talking about a certain or a topic, ranking games, kind of sharing like best of lists, top 10 lists, like talked about like a little bit of my time in history with the Dreamcast as well in a bonus episode. So a lot of stuff there. All of that you can find links below and see, and I appreciate all the attention and support and anything that y'all can do to help. It's awesome. As usual, you can always rate and review and thumbs up and like or whatever in your podcast platform of choice, wherever you're listening to this at. But the big thing is if you can just, if you know somebody, or if you share the link, or if you refer a friend, that would be awesome. I'm just looking to always meet people and you know, see who's out there who you might have an interest in the same things that we're doing here. So that's it. This is longer than I thought it was going to be. Man, this keeps happening. I just keep talking. And yeah, so no more. Enjoy the episode. First up, like I said, is Rusty. And then after the break is Jason. And we will see you all next week. Bye. All right. Well, welcome back to the show, Rusty. We had you on recently, but you're coming back for some more, and I appreciate that to help me fill out the roster episode. So thanks for coming on again.
Of course, man. It's a pleasure.
To get back into the swing of things, we'll start with the icebreaker, and then we'll move into the main content and the main course. Let me try one of these new ones again. What is an option or a setting that you always change before starting a game?
Technically the gamma, but that's not optional. A lot of times, every horror game I touch, you have to, you know, make sure it's like spooky or not. And what's weird too is like, I always kind of like make it like light enough. Of course, I'm 48. I need to be able to see the game. that's probably the default one. But usually I kind of balance the difficulty out based off of what I've read online. I try to keep it normal for the most part. I'm not trying to be a hero at all. But if it's something like lately, I've been doing a lot more emulated games,
emulation is perfectly legal. It's, you know, where you're acquiring the other side of the things is like, hey, I'm hoping that's your own backups, but it's neither here nor there. Emulation is perfectly okay.
So when I'm playing my perfectly legal copy of Sega's Nightshade, I put it on easy because people made Shinobi for the PS2, and I was like, I'm not gonna fool with that. So I'm actually just kind of doing it to have fun with the games. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, prove a point. So really, it's the difficulty. Just kind of because again, so I'm, you know, I don't have time to like play a lot of games, and I don't want to like I don't need to prove anything. I'm not a Souls player, and that's not, you know. I usually just try and balance it out for myself, if anything.
Yeah, I've never been the type to try like the hardest difficulty mode or anything at all on games. And like, yeah. I'm also not saying like get rid of it and abolish it. And like, but I mean, because people love like making it as most difficult, like as of a challenge as possible, and people like get joy out of that. But I've just never been able to do that. Like, if I start banging my head against a wall and can't progress, it's like, how am I finding entertainment in this game if I can't get past this point? Like, this is crazy.
One of the more recent ones I could say, actually, because I had played through it on PS3, but when they put Bayonetta on PS4, I knew going into it, like, I hated going through it the first time on normal, because it gets brutal after a certain point. But what I really like doing, though, actually, I like playing a game through on easy, building my character stats up, and then going into New Game Plus with some tools. So that's, and then I'm like, okay, now I can play. I feel like now I'm playing the normal mode with, you know, better options and not trying to punish myself.
Yeah, that's a good way to spin it, everything too. And I actually just thinking about that, a game series that I would consider trying on a harder difficulty. I enjoy the Dynasty Warriors games. I mean, I haven't played the most recent entry or anything, but like there'd be times when I'd be in like a long match or like a long map, you know, and all that stuff. And it really wasn't challenged at all. Like a lot of like, you know, you just get 30 people just kind of stand around you in a circle. And for the most part, don't ever really like challenge you until you get to the occasional like general or whatever. But I'd love to see, you know, like a little bump in difficulty where like I had to think about parrying or blocking attacks, you know, in between my long string of combos and stuff. That could maybe bring some extra value to me for a challenge there.
Well, I like the Arkham games for that. I think the Arkham games did hard after you beat the normal mode. So when you went into it again, it took away like the enemy notifications, like when you were supposed to dodge. It took away things, but like by that point it felt natural. I was like, okay, I kind of know what I'm supposed to be doing anyways. So while it was more difficult, it wasn't like, I don't know. It's hard to think of as a hard mode, really. It was like a New Game Plus that was a little bit more difficult, but not anywhere near, but I like their approach to it. It was a step up.
One thing that I always get, I get some ridicule from my friends and my brother and stuff on it. I'm an inverted aim player. Do you invert your camera controls?
I'm usually an up is down, up is up, down is down person. Do you do left or left?
Right? I don't think I invert those. I think it's just the Y axis that's inverted for me. It's like weird, like flight style controls.
Yeah.
And I just think that my brain, I think, is looking at like the analog stick. And then if it goes down here on the back end, it's going up. And that's where I'm visually like thinking I'm doing, but it doesn't make sense. It's just obviously people's brains are wired one way or the other to kind of like intuitively feel that out. And it's
did you play a lot of Scarier growing up? Or like Afterburner?
I mean, I feel like I played... Yeah, I feel like I always had... I always mixed it up. I played everything and anything that I could, so... Yeah.
Yeah, the arcade units, they have like the stick that... It's exactly like you said.
Yeah, the pitch and yaw for you flight enthusiasts. The other thing I think I remember playing a lot of is Sky Odyssey on the PS2. I loved that game, but that was also one where me and my friend would pass it back and forth and would invert controls when I would start to play and then uninvert when he would play, and it was not as easy to just pass back and forth.
Well, actually, on that tip, I would say, too, like, usually it's, for me, it's the, nowadays, it's the fighting game controls. Because, like, usually, like, if it's a six-button layout and I'm playing on controller, I'm like, all right, well, I have to, you know, reconfigure that for that. I was always a put my mediums on the shoulder buttons. Mm. So, like, my face buttons on Super Nintendo for Street Fighter was always, like, light and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Punch or kick, and then mediums on the shoulder buttons. I know some people do heavier on that, but it just didn't feel natural for that. But that's pretty much always, like, I would say that's the guaranteed one after the difficulty, though.
Yeah, yeah, I will do that now for like Street Fighter games as well. Like, I don't know what the default is, but I'll make sure I go in and map it. I'll do, you know, square, triangle, and R1 will be light, medium, and heavy. So I do the heavies on the shoulders. But then I'm like, well, are they going to make R2 the heavy kick, or are they making L1 the heavy kick? And so I just make sure I set it the same way for me mentally to always, like, be prepared for that. But
nowadays, for the most part, they default to joystick, or for arcades, which is great. But I don't always want to plug it in.
So. Yeah. Yep, cool. I was rolling the dice with a question on settings of video games and options, but I think there was far more dialogue there than I was anticipating, which is cool. I'm curious to see what other people think about that question as well. Let's get into the main part of the episode then. You had expressed interest in two questions to do. Let's talk about what is an average game or a game that doesn't get enough attention that you personally enjoy?
So this is actually I consider it like probably my favorite game of all time, although that's kind of like could be challenged by Batman on the Nintendo lately. But it's a game by Atlus called Trap Gunner. It was a late era PlayStation 1 game that didn't really get much press. I mean, I think everybody was looking towards the Dreamcast and PS2 at this point. Essentially, it's like if you played the old Spy versus Spy game, where you have the screen is split in two, and you see the characters on... Basically, each character has their window in each one. And this game is that, but like with an anime aesthetic for setting traps for the other player. And you can kind of force each other into those traps. But it's got a great look. It didn't run super well. There was a lot of action on screen. But it's one of those games that, like, I just can't stop. I still play it all the time. I've got the Japanese version out on my PlayStation 3 outside right now. But it's just something, like, I just keep playing it after all these years. And it's really satisfying to, like, set up a sequence where you have one of the traps is something, you project somebody in a certain direction. And you can chain those together to make them do, like, U-turns and stuff like that, and then fall into, like, a sticky pit, drop a sticky bomb by them. It's kind of like if you played Twisted Metal back in the day. At a certain point, no matter what weapon you had, you were just freezing the person and then going up to them and then dropping a bomb off and running away. It's that same kind of reward that this game does without being a car combat thing, is the way to put it. You actually, as I one of your books, actually, I think this is some one we I blurb for, actually.
The volume 4, yeah. I reached out to you. I think was just looking for more people, just for more contributions, more ideas to kind of be involved with it, and you were going to do a little blurb for it, and it being like like longer than I thought and all that stuff. So I created a whole new like section. I was like, yeah, this will be rad. I'll do this for I'll have a lot of people do this. And it was like this additional thought section. The fun fact for that book, there's only one additional thoughts section and it's just yours. It's just a bonus coverage on a game. And so, I mean, you have to have it, you know? So maybe in future volumes, there'll be some other contributors that, you know, want to write not quite a full entry, but also not quite just a little blurb about it, but you know, the happy medium in between. So, yeah.
Kind of like there was another game that came out that it's kind of more popular in the emulation scene nowadays, or with people looking for obscure PlayStation games. Silent Bomber.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one that's got a kind of a really unique playstyle, an explosion based gameplay. But yeah, it's weird. Those two are kind of similar to me. They're like, these are games that like I don't think they'll ever bother to put them on PSN. Granted, they did just put Mr. Mosquito on PlayStation 5, which is insane. I'm kind of like, there's all these great games they should be putting on there, but they're like, here's Mr. Mosquito. I'm like, that's hilarious. I'm not sure if it's a troll job or not.
But I always wanted to play Mr. Mosquito as a kid, and I mean, I loved, because at that point I was already playing like anything and everything that just was entertaining to me. And like, I PS1 had like Incredible Crisis and it was just such like a random like collection of like fun little antics and weird things. And so when Mr. Mosquito was coming out, I was like, oh, this looks cool. And then I saw like a lot of previews of like, one of the levels, like being like the bathtub scene, you know, and I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I really want to play this game and I think it's going to be really good. Like it'll be fun gameplay, but I don't want to be in a moment where I'm playing it and somebody walks in and sees me like buzzing around like a woman in a bathtub and think like something strange about young Darren. So that always just like was in the back of my mind. Every time I picked up the case off the shelf and was thinking about buying it from a video game store, it was like, I don't know, man, maybe one day. And I've just never gotten a chance to go back and play it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, granted, like, that's, you know, that's a much larger scope that they're doing it, but like, that's the thing too. Like, I appreciate games that like Trap Gun or something like that, or Silent Bomber, that no one would pay attention to, but now you wouldn't pay 50, 60 bucks back in the day for it. I did at Electronics Boutique in San Antonio, Texas, Marbach Mall. Anyways, but that's like the kind of thing, like, I think there's certain games that when they come out for 50 bucks are too risky. But if you see it for a little bit, like, there's a game will get a reputation for being like not that good when it's 20 bucks. But people, after a certain point, once you start emulating, you go back to, you're like, yeah, this actually really was good. I'm kind of sad I missed out on it. And it kind of has like a second life as a result. One of my other favorite ones is a game called Elevator Action Returns, which basically is kind of like the original Elevator Action through a Die Hard filter. And that one eventually, I think because we did it for the Hardcore Gaming 101 Taito book. But I asked Kurt if I could put that front and center on the cover, because no one's ever going to put Elevator Action Returns on a cover ever again. And we've talked about it on podcast, and eventually they got around to putting it on the PS4 and PS5. I was like, okay, maybe we can make something happen with Trap Gunner here soon. So,
yeah. So Trap Gunner, like, were there other games competing for your attention at that time? Was there like a decision or a coin flip and everything?
As far as like what I was playing, I was playing Rival Schools, United by Fate. A lot of like that era of Tekken 3. Jeez, I mean, there were so many games. Then I didn't have a wife and a kid, just, you know, sitting up all night and bartending job and playing Trap Gunner. But yeah, that got a lot of the attention, and it's just I started making it like as a joke as like my favorite game, but then I was like, no, I'm sincerely like it's so well done as a concept. I think the technology didn't necessarily help the execution to be what it could be. But yeah, if you're a fan of Bomberman, even this is like an easy one to kind of check. I mean, if you had like a network play mode where you had four versus four, that would be fantastic.
Yeah,
like there's it's a formula that's got a lot of options. The character designs are very cool. They're very much, you know, I like anime in the 90s kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's all Toonami, early Toonami's kind of stuff. The music is fantastic. The character select screen has a song called Searching for Love, and it's got this piano. It sounds like a CC Peniston song. Which is that kind of era of weird jazz, like Marvel vs. Capcom has too. But yeah, a lot to like about it. There's not really, I thought was a flaw. Just be, again, to the technology, I think maybe didn't make it perform as possibly as it could have.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see them like doing like similar, like a game, like just in that same style, but like with this additional player count, you know, or like a team, you know, 4v4, like you were saying. And it's pretty entertaining. It's just had like that. It caught me off guard. Like I'd always heard of it, and I never had played it. And then, so when I was doing the book, you know, it covered all the Atlas games. So, I had to play it, and it was actually really entertaining. Like just the cat and mouse like balance of it all. Like you do have like you are trying to find more of the traps to lay down, so you don't have just unlimited amount. So you are on like a little bit of a restock run, or like, hey, let me get set up before I try and lay out my trap or lay out my plan here. So there's like this give and take balance to it, and seeing that done with like a, you know, on a networked environment or with like a slightly larger player count could actually be a really fun thing, like for like a modern platforms.
Like the Dead by Daylight or something like that too. Like there's you can have like the one superpowered, like, you know, Fat Man from Metal Gear Solid 2 as like a special cameo, or like he's so hard to beat because he's got like the whole padding proof. But there's a lot of things I think the formula could be applied to that. As it is, I still really enjoy it. Again, too, with the like Duck Station, that sort of thing too. You can bump up the CD speed and some, like add like 8 megs of RAM instead of like the 2 native ones, and it's a little bit smoother of a game.
That's cool. Well, Trap Gunner is the game. Atlas published it. I forget the developer.
At Rackdom, I think. R A C D O A M.
Yeah. And then it also had that really like that VHS, like TV monitor, like aesthetic and all stuff as well going throughout it. It was a game of the 90s for sure. I was something that I just completely missed and passed me by and everything. So, but really happy to have experienced it, you know, for the book. So, kind of cool to hear that, you know, something from the archives and maybe that people have forgotten about or missed out on, you know, definitely check it out. Maybe like watch at least a Let's Play video or YouTube, or for your legal emulation needs, if you have a copy that you own that you're looking to play, you know, check it out that way as well.
I do have a real copy of it, but I would say too that like if anybody listens to this podcast or within earshot is part of retroachievements.org, hit it. Like I would love to play through that with achievements. Like, you know, granted, it's that little dopamine hit.
Yeah, you know? I love retro achievements.
Yeah, you just platinum Vampire Survivors. I'm like, good Lord.
Oh yeah. That one didn't take as long as that. Well, maybe it did, and I just zoned out there because it is kind of hypnotic. Time does go by when you're just staring at this massive like screen. But that just happened. And Astro Bot, I just got that platinum on that as well. So, but that was also a quick play. Those are quicker doses. But I just, the achievements help me get a little bit more out of a game. And like, if I see like, oh, I'm going to put this down for good, unless, oh, I can do this one last objective. And like, it helps me feel like I'm getting value out of it. But yeah, retroactively doing that is cool for retro achievements.
Especially for retro games. Like, I played the Taxan G.I. Joe game, which is one of my favorite games too. I love that game. It's like a proto Metal Slug in a way. But yeah, playing through it with achievements, so I was like, okay, this is more fun. Now I have a little bit added incentive to play through it. So.
Cool. Well, thank you, Rusty. Thank you for sharing. That'll do it for this episode. Anything you want to kind of plug or share for any listeners before we wrap?
No, just as usual, I'm rustyshackles.bsky.social. Bisky Social. On Instagram as artist Rusty Shackles. But again, you just look up Rusty Shackles art, you'll find me.
Yeah, I'll have the those links and the information in the show notes as well. But thanks a lot for joining, Rusty. We'll have you on the future for sure.
That was awesome, man. Thank you.
Welcome to another episode. I've got my friend Jason with me again. So welcome back to the show, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm looking forward to being interrogated. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's how this works. It's the interrogation show. This isn't the icebreaker, but have you been playing any games recently? Is there like a current game that you've been spending some of your time with? Or are you kind of been stuck in projects?
You know what? What's nice is sometimes the projects are playing the game. As of the recording of this, I'm actually currently working on the next episode of Game Rave TV. And it's going to be themed, you never forget your first one. And it's going to be focused about the first game you got for each system. Mm. And that for me on the PlayStation, that was Street Fighter Alpha 1. And it's been so much fun to go back and just play it like the old quote unquote turbo speeds. And, you know, like for me, Alpha 1 was so crazy because it was the first time where, especially in the arcades, actual anime artwork, Japanese animation style artwork, was finally being accepted. And going from the old school Street Fighter 2 graphics to these just bright, super colorful, huge sprite sizes, especially for Saget and Bison, it was just phenomenal. And when I finally got my PlayStation 1 and Street Fighter Alpha 1, I must have like had a permanent D-pad indentation on my thumb, because that's all I did. If I wasn't in school or at work, I just played Alpha 1 until the disc scratched.
That's like, fun.
It was so good.
Yeah, my my first PS1 game was Twisted Metal. I remember taking
good
that
choice.
Home. Yeah, and didn't have a memory card, but I mean, it was early on enough that that still used that like password save system, luckily. So I wasn't completely broken there. It wouldn't be until the following year, still memory cardless, rented Resident Evil 2 and Final Fantasy 7 from Hollywood Video.
Oh, God.
So my brother and I played through the first 4 hours of Final Fantasy 7, I don't know, 30 or 40 times before we finally like were able to explain to our parents, like, you know, you understand this is the problem we are facing because we don't have our progress saved. Oof, it was rough.
Oh, dude, that's like the ultimate speed run.
Yeah, no, we did it so much. Like, I know that section of the game like so well, just because of all that I did, you know, growing up and everything. Like, so that first Final Fantasy VII remake, that first part, like the fact that it's just like the Midgar section is like in my in my head. I'm like, yep, well, I know this part all so well. Like, let's do this. And just the nostalgia that I have for that, like the music and the environments and all that stuff. You know, even though we played it over and over and over again, it was just like finding techniques to try and like play it the most, or like starting on a weekend and like putting the PlayStation on top of like a lampshade and having like a small children's fan like blowing upwards to keep it cool. Like, we did everything we could to like just play as much. Oh, it's good times.
Oh man, I couldn't even fathom that.
Oh yeah, we had this. It was this cool fan. It was a like a red fan with like a blue fan blade and like a green power button. It was like a children's little tiny fan, and you could tilt it at all these different angles. But it could also like sit like flat on its back and aim straight upwards. And it was thick enough that, you know, circulation would still allow like an airflow to happen. So we were like, all right, we'll have this fan, boom, lampshade on top of that. And then on top of that, the PlayStation, where the open spot, you know, below is where the air will flow through and not overheat our system from staying on for 48 hours. And yeah, we did that a couple times.
That's fantastic.
All right. Well, let's get into the icebreaker here. And that wasn't it. Like I said, that was a bonus bucks for listeners, just to hear about what we're currently playing and some fun stories. But the icebreaker here, you are the newly elected mayor of Metro City. What does the Mad Gear do to try and blackmail you? So
what does...
Yeah, what is your Jessica? What is something that they could like take from you, or hold hostage from you, you know, what is something that they could, you know, do to you that would, your instinct would be to hit the streets and beat up hundreds of goons until you take down this gang?
I was saying, to play off an answer from a previous episode, if I hadn't already done it to myself, it would be to steal all my Mass Effect save data.
Mm.
Here's your 700 hours of single player just in Mass Effect 3, and your 300 hours of multiplayer in Mass Effect 3, There would just be bodies. Like, they would need like street cleaners and ambulances just to follow me until I got my little memory card back.
That's fun.
What about you?
Oh no, I asked the questions. I don't have these answers. Gosh,
it is an interrogation. I knew it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What would I like? I guess it would be like. I guess it would be like my PlayStation, you know, like, I mean, just like, take my PlayStation. Oh no, I'm going to come after you. Like,
we've taken your kitty fan and your memory card.
Yeah. Your children's box fan and your PlayStation. They're with us. No, I mean, I guess, yeah, you could, you know, the wife or the family or something like that is like what happens to, yeah, I don't know. What possession do I have that I would be like, I guess my comics. My comic book collection. I have a really large, not even single issues. Unfortunately, it's just like hardcover and like deluxe editions. Like I rebuy the same book like multiple times, and if it gets a bigger version or a more deluxe version, I will buy that and replace the previous one. But I have like a large wall bookshelf that I custom built in our house that is just overflowing with giant comics. And yeah, if that disappeared, I would smash Doug's car to pieces and work through the entire city streets just to get him back.
Oh, my car.
My car. all right. What's our question? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I almost forgot the main episode question. Okay. Here we go. On to the main episode. I may say this about every question and every episode we ask, but this is a favorite question of mine. I do enjoy hearing this one answered because it doesn't just give you an expected answer. There's always some fun, something kind of unique or underappreciated that kind of comes to light. But what is a personal favorite game or an average game that you love that just doesn't get enough attention?
I'm going to do a deep cut here, especially with the Metro City theme question. And we're going to go with Riot Zone on the Turbo Duo / TurboGrafx CD. The only way you can describe Riot Zone is, Mom, I want Final Fight. And she goes, honey, we have Final Fight at home. Riot Zone was this it was like NEC just took Silly Putty to Final Fight. Laid it down, pulled it back up, and before they could make the imprint, they kind of like stretched it out a little bit and maybe blurred a couple sections and then pressed down and shipped it. The reason I love it so much is because of how, for lack of a better phrase, how obscure the Turbo Duo was in the United States. By the time Riot Zone came to it, everyone had already moved on and were knee deep in Sega CD with Final Fight or, you know, 3DO and Jaguar. And everything about Riot Zone shouldn't work, but it does. Like, the characters are extremely stiff. They have maybe 3 frames of animation. The lead character, who is quote unquote not Cody, he literally walks like he's trying to do like a choo-choo train dance shuffle move. And his voiceover is like probably the same guy who was the announcer for Super Street Fighter 2, but also voiced Guile for some reason. So like, it's this like street ready dude in jeans and a white t-shirt, and you go to do is basically Terry Bogard burn knuckle move, and all you hear is like, super upper. And like the first stage you play, it's raining as if it were like Streets of Rage 2, except for whatever reason, the rain layer is part of the background. So you're literally walking on top of the rain. It's just like so bad. Like all the boss characters are like, hey, let's have an evil clown, or like, let's have two of the most, and this is made in Japan, so like, but like, it was like two of the most stereotypical, like, we'll have Kung Fu do with the two Wolverine claws and the woman who's an angry geisha, but she's got killer fan blades. Or I think like the final boss is a statue that comes to life for no reason. Just even the music, like, it's good music, but it's like it's just like a half step into cheesy to not be like as cool or rocking as the Final Fight soundtrack or even the Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack. And like, despite having like a full set at the time, like literally Magical Chase, you know, Bonks, etc., like I always went back to Riot Zone. Like it is a guilty pleasure. It is simple fun. If you know, it's not too hard, it's not too challenging. If you know how to throw a character into another group of characters, you can basically play bowling half the time. It's just so good. And I like, if you've never played it and have access to ways to play any game you want, I would highly recommend downloading it and checking it out. It is just such good fun.
I've never heard of it. And I am a fan of beat 'em ups. I'm Googling it and looking this up while you're looking at it. And I don't see why you draw comparisons to Cody here. Cody wears a white t-shirt, jeans, you know, really tight fit and like sneakers and everything. And he's like a blonde hair, just kind of average American man. This guy is in blue jeans, sneakers. He's a blonde haired, you know, average man, but he has a sleeveless white t-shirt. Not the same. It's not the same at all. Completely different. I love the artwork though. That cover art is kind of cool. He's got like a little like drop shadow on both the characters. I don't know.
Yep, and your teammate, instead of like the wrestler mayor, is like insert NPC number 3 from a Batman game. It's just the mohawk, the red jacket.
He looks like cyberpunk-ish a little bit, but I'm not quite sure what's going on there. It looks cool. Like, this definitely would have been a game had I seen it on the shelf. I would have played it as a kid. I did not have any access to this system or this platform. It was just not something that was available to me. So just, I had a Genesis and my best friend had an SNES. Before that, I had an NES. But yeah, this looks fun. I definitely want to check this out. It's the Japanese name of it, Crest of Wolf. It's even better, even cooler. I like this artwork. I like everything this game's got going for it. And so a beat 'em up's like, it's like pizza, you know. It's never really bad, you know. It might not be the best, but you can still have a good time and enjoy it one way or the other. So I should check this out. It's
still delectable.
I can probably look for a cheap copy or something like that. I have the not that you. Even though I every time I think about it, I feel like you are a representative of this company, but I have the Polymega, you know, sitting here. Yay! And so I could, you know, rip this and import it and, you know, play it and everything, just right on there. But yeah, I got this just because of you speaking about it and you seeing it and watching some of your YouTube videos on it. I was like, this is the exact system that I need. I'm going to buy one. And then almost a year later, it got shipped to me and delivered. And that was a good story. Yeah, it's definitely a cool retro system to check out to play some of these classic games on, for sure.
I say it's still my daily driver. I only turn the real PS1 or other system it supports on if I need to use a Game Shark or something else.
Yeah, and you can still put in cheats into it. Is that right? I thought I saw.
You can. It's a little mucked up, though. When I told Eric about it and so forth, I guess they're like, they have a guy now whose his only sole purpose is to figure out and fix the Game Shark engine in it. When you're inputting a code, like in a normal Game Shark, you would input, I think it's 12 digits, 12 digits, and then you return carriage and then your next 12 digits for a multi-line code. Mm-hmm. In the Polymega, there's no return carriage. So like, you're just doing one long string. So like, if you lose your place, you can't figure out like where you were supposed to like go edit. And then two, I think they only allowed for, I think it was technically 4 or 5 lines, and some Game Shark codes, based on what you're trying to do, can be up to like 12 to 13 lines in a single code. Mm-hmm. But like I said, that issue aside, like, I love the Polymega. Like, it is one of the like most, what's we're looking for? It's one of the most user-friendly, user-intuitive systems I've ever used, and it's just essentially like an emulation machine. Like it just cracks me up every time.
Yeah, it's a Riot Zone, thank you for being a cool game and being on Jason's list. But we're gonna just pivot here to Polymega Talk real quick before we wrap the episode. Yeah, it's a awesome console. It's got a simple like low key look to it, but still I think it looks great. It's the only system sitting in my bedroom, and it's just open and clean with some cable managed stuff, so you can't even tell. But it's sitting there. But yeah, the user interface and everything about it. It's for people who aren't sure, if this would be of interest to you or not. It's like iTunes for retro games. So back in the day, you used to put CDs in and rip music to your library, and then put that and play that on your iPod or whatever. This is lets you like back up your own personal games to its internal drive, or you probably need to get an expanded drive or external drive if you start getting a large library. But being able to have just one set system access, the hundreds of PS1 games that I have, as well as there's external modules that you can buy to add on to it, that like the Nintendo 64 module that also has its own custom controller that really feels like, like a great, modern version of a Nintendo 64 playable controller. And they've done this for a whole bunch of systems, all in one set top box, all with, really sleek and easy to use. And it's just super awesome. So if you're looking for something that you can plug in HDMI to your TV, not mess with anything, and not have to drag out your games every time you want to play them, you could just start digitizing your library and have like a really awesome time with it.
Well said.
That's my spiel. But yeah, heard about it from Jason, and I appreciate the internet convincing that I went through to just like, oh yeah, this looks like it's too good to be true. I've got to get my hands on one of these things and put the order in, and it was well worth it.
I said even if you don't get the Polymega, if you have the real hardware, their retro controllers are phenomenal. Their NES controller is probably the button layout is at a diagonal, so like you have to turn off like what now 30-40 years of muscle memory, but once you get used to it, it is like the only NES pad to use. Like it is so comfortable and it's so good.
Yeah, that's the other thing, that their element, like their little modules that you put on for those systems have original hardware like inputs, so you can use original controllers if you have them, or use theirs, which like you said, theirs will also plug into original hardware. So it's a cool thing, and there's some stuff on the horizon from them as well, like a digital or an app and a smaller like side version, the potential for like a online store and library. There's a lot of cool things with this company. This whole podcast episode has now pivoted into just praising the Polymega, but go to their website, check out their stuff. It's a really cool thing. And the other cool thing about it too, there are some modern touches. Like it'll tell you how many hours you've played a game and like give you like information on the game and like have a nice little like front end menu. But it's cool. My wife's been playing Chrono Trigger on there, and
very nice.
And it's showing like, 27 hours played or whatever. It's cool that it's like keeping track and like, gamifying these old retro games that originally would just if you weren't there, you didn't have a witness, like no one knows. But I just like having this kind of digital archive of it all available to me. It's really rad. That's it then. We answered the question, and then even more bonus material for y'all. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, everyone who is listening along. And Jason, anything you want to share before we kind of wrap up here? Any plugs or shout outs or anything you want to do before we go?
Just pick up Darren's books. Check out my website. Come sub to me on YouTube at Game Rave TV, so I can get my eventual 10,000 sub plaque after 200 years.
Subscribe on YouTube, yeah, for sure. And then I'll put the links and to your site and everything like in the show notes for the podcast as well, so people you can find that down below. But appreciate you coming on for another episode, Jason. We will have you on again for sure in the future, I'm sure.
All right, thanks for bringing me on. I love it.